This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov. Good morning, Shavua Tov. Hope you are well.
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Yeah, we spoke last week about the Maccabi games coming to an end, and we discussed some of the participants who had to come from a distance in order to get there. One of the things that I just wanted to mention to listeners, because I'm not sure if this is well known, but under the auspices of the Maccabi Games, one of the events that is organized, and this has been traditionally done not only this time around, but in fact for previous games as well, one of the events that's organized is at the Kotel in Jerusalem, at the Western Wall, an event for those participants who have never had a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah.
Wow, I didn't know
And they do a bar mitzvah and a bat mitzvah for all participants who wish to participate, who've never had that done at home. And this year, there were more than 1,000 people who participated and who became bat mitzvah or bar mitzvah as part of their part of the experience at the Maccabi Games. And it just emphasizes the fact that it may be about sport. It may, you know, the context may be about sport, but it really is much more than just sport.
Yeah, that is amazing. I really did not know about this at all. Let's talk about the escalation, further gradual escalation. You and I have been chatting about this in terms of the conflict between Iran and the U.S. over the weekend. So Israel slightly drawn into it, but not quite there yet. Tell us what's happening.
It's sort of a conflict of attrition almost, even though there are clearly quite significant strikes that are taking place backwards and forwards. The US over the weekend concentrated on striking links between the southern part of Iran, where the Straits of Hormuz are located, and the rest of Iran. So bridges and railway lines and supply routes that were bringing in all kinds of arms and ammunition and supplies to that area of southern Iran. Those were the targets for the U.S. activity over the weekend in order to try somehow to cut off that area of the Straits of Hormuz, the clear objective, the clear target for the U.S. still remains the Straits of Hormuz. Iran, for its part, seemed to expand its area of operation a little bit more. And ironically, Jordan came under significant attack from Iran, not only yesterday, but indeed over the previous days of the weekend as well. Also, Kuwait, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates has now been drawn in. That wasn't really part of the target range for the Iranians up until now. And so these are really all countries around the Gulf area that have been attacked by Iran over the weekend and yesterday. And yesterday, there was an attack that was carried out against Aqaba, the port of Aqaba in Jordan, which is right on the border with Eilat. Those people who visited Eilat may recall having looked across the bay and the Gulf of Aqaba, which is the sea that feeds Eilat. You can look across the bay and you can see on the other side in Jordan, and you can see the Jordanian city of Aqaba, which is, I suppose, the equivalent of Eilat in Jordan. And that was the city that came under some attack yesterday. Interestingly, that in Aqaba, the king of Jordan has a residence. And it is actually quite easy to see the king's residence when you're in Eilat, because as you look across the bay, there's a huge Jordanian flag that flies, which is right at the residence, the king's residence. And my understanding is that Aqaba forms part of Israel's protection zone. So to the extent that Israel has the Iron Dome located in Eilat to protect the city of Eilat, which it does do, that Iron Dome is also designated to protect the Jordanian city of Aqaba. While we're already there and while we're already working, we may as well cover the area of Aqaba as well, because it really is just right adjacent to Eilat. And that's exactly what happened yesterday when Aqaba came under attack from Iran. Israeli defenses were drawn in order to protect the city of Aqaba. And all of this really points to a very, very fascinating redrawing of lines in the Middle East about who is sided with who. And this particular conflict is really redrawing those lines so significantly, when we understand that not only is Israel protecting the Jordanian city of Aqaba, and indeed probably other Jordanian territory as well, but we do know that there are still Iron Dome teams located in the Gulf, in the United Arab Emirates and in other Gulf states that are located there with Israeli equipment and Israeli soldiers who are doing the job of helping to protect those countries against attacks by the Iranians. It really does redraw the lines, the traditional lines that were once the Middle East. It's not the same anymore, really, isn't it? The last 3 years has really changed that substantially. And we expect that there will be further incremental increases in the intensity of this conflict. And at some point, we expect that Israel will be drawn in. We understand that Ben-Gurion Airport is now again looking more like a military airbase, a U.S. military airbase, than a civilian airport. That was the case a few months ago. Many of those aircraft were then taken away. Well, they're back. The number of aircraft that were previously at Ben-Gurion seems to have increased again, with military aircraft being there. So we are expecting Israel to be more drawn into this as the U.S. Arms up the area again, as reserve soldiers are called up again to the IDF. We're expecting this to come much, much closer to Israel's borders over the coming days and weeks.
And absolutely no doubt about that. Let's talk about this protesters marching towards Gaza's border yesterday. Now, that's apparently in spite of it being declared a closed military zone. What was this about?
So yesterday was the so-called March of Thousands, which was designed to mark the 21 years since Israel evacuated from Gaza, from Gush Katif in Gaza, and brought all Jews, living and dead, because the cemeteries were also emptied out. People who had been buried in Gaza as part of the Israeli settlements in Gaza were also brought out. That was 21 years ago. And a lot of people seem to conveniently forget that Israel vacated Gaza forcefully, because many of those citizens who lived there were not willing just to get up and leave everything that they built up over many, many years. And the government and the army forced them to leave. And what the Gazans then did was, first of all, destroyed everything that the Jews had built in Gaza, including greenhouses and including farms, which could easily have been picked up and just cultivated and used to produce a good economy in Gaza. But all of that was destroyed right away. And we now know that the money went into building tunnels, into building attack capability against Israel, rather than to develop Gaza's economy. So that is really something which we should take note of, and particularly those who are critical of Israel should remember that that action took place. It was very, very painful. 21 years have gone by, and the March of Thousands yesterday was an attempt to try to just remember that evacuation that took place. The military were afraid that people would try to cross into Gaza, because the intention of those marches, those protesters, was really to go into Gaza and to promote the idea of Jews and Israelis going back in and living in Gaza. And herein lies a very, very fascinating topic for debate. about, you know, what happens next in Gaza and whether it's right that Israel should have the opportunity to settle people in Gaza, take control over parts of the Gaza Strip or maybe all of the Gaza Strip and allow people to live there. It is very fertile. It's a beautiful part of the world. The beaches are legendary in terms of how magnificent they are. And yet, unfortunately, none of that has been cultivated. And certainly things have gone very much backward over the last 21 years since the Jews left Gush Katif. So the military were nervous that people would try to cross into Gaza. And as a result of that, they declared a closed military zone for a 24-hour period around the Gaza envelope area, around the whole area that borders on the Gaza Strip on the Israeli side. Well, the protesters took no notice of that, including 28 members of Knesset and actually ministers in the government who joined this protest, went straight through the closed military zone. The soldiers didn't actually do a lot. They didn't take a very aggressive stance to try and stop people. They policed it. They allowed it to go ahead. As I understand it, people ultimately did not cross over into Gaza. So it's all a little unfortunate that civilians and particularly ministers in the government and members of Knesset were ignoring military orders not to progress towards the Gaza border. But there is this open discussion about what next for Gaza and whether Israel should have the opportunity to settle people in the Gaza Strip, whether Gaza should form part of Israel, either in part or in whole. What happens to the 2 million Arabs who are still living in Gaza and essentially really will not leave there, many of whom are still intent upon building an ability to attack Israel in the future? All of these questions are unanswered, and I think that there is certainly a debate that's going on right now about what next for Gaza. And this march yesterday just kind of reinforced it a little bit and brought it to our attention that we still have so many unanswered questions about what next for Gaza.
Is there any recourse, any repercussions for the members of parliament who marched despite the orders not to?
Well, the orders were really not to march, but rather not to march in that particular area.
Yes, yes.
And I think that the military took a relatively soft approach, not only the members of Knesset and the members of the government, but also the civilians, many of whom encroached upon the closed military area. As a general, the military are very stringent in applying rules about closed military areas because they consider that to be a physical danger to people, and therefore they don't want people to go into dangerous areas. As it turns out, I think that the military were taking extra precautions to try to prevent people from going into Gaza. And so the idea of the closed military area was to just keep people away from the Gaza border. As it turns out, even though they did encroach into the closed military zone, as I understand it, nobody actually went into Gaza. And so all's well that ends well, and there's no action, as I understand it, where that will be taking place against those people.
I do want to try and talk about this story quickly. The municipality of Bnei Brak intends to implement gender segregation in some streets. Now, how is this even possible and why?
Well, as I understand it, I mean, we know that the municipality of Bnei Brak is clearly very much run by the ultra-Orthodox people who live there. And therefore, it is run according to ultra-Orthodox rules. For example, on Shabbat, roads are closed in Bnei Brak. When I say closed, I mean there are barriers that are put up to prevent vehicles from traveling on Shabbat or Chagim. And that is a regular event. Nobody even bats an eyelid. People who are not particularly Shabbat observant and who might wish to drive through Bnei Brak are simply prevented from doing so because the roads are all barricaded and blocked and nobody is able to drive there. That's been the situation for many, many years. And it's kind of taken as a given. Now the next, thing, and there are many other examples like that, where religious law is, I mean, I would say imposed upon people, but in the most part, the residents, they welcome it. They like it. That's what they want. That's what they subscribe to. The idea of gender segregation apparently applies to streets, in particular a few streets in Bnei Brak, where there are many event halls and therefore crowds of people potentially congregate in those areas going in or out of the halls, and therefore an attempt to somehow separate the genders by making sure that one part of the street is only for women and one part of the street is only for men, and that will allow them to go into their event halls in their separate groups in order to avoid the mixing even outside of the event hall. Now, I'm not sure how that's going to be policed exactly and what happens if somebody gets on the wrong side of the street inadvertently or might not be going to this particular event because, as I say, there are many event halls in certain areas. I've no idea how that's going to be implemented and how it's going to be policed and what happens if you cross over onto the wrong side when it's not your time or your turn. But it is a very interesting idea. And of course, I'm sure that the listeners out there have their views. I mean, again, on the one hand, most people who live in Bnei Brak may welcome that. They may feel comfortable with that. That might well subscribe to their style of life. But what about others who inadvertently find themselves cruising down the street in Bnei Brak, not being part of an event, and get on the wrong side of the road? What does that leave them? So it can be a little problematic. But what do you think? What do you guys think about it?
Yeah, let me know. I'm just trying to think of the practicalities. You want to go to the shop on the one side, or a mother and a son is... It's just very, very, very confusing for me. I can't get my brain around it. It is 8:01. I'm Howard Feldman. That was your Israel Report. And catch Anthony tomorrow morning, 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.